Now, Afghanistan, really no resources, didn't have oil, didn't have the gas, but it did have the land that the pipeline needed to go across.
And they also had opium.
Lots and lots of opium.
Now, one thing that is incredibly significant here that the world has been horribly misled on, it's extremely well documented, is that in January of 2001, after instituting a ban the previous summer, the Taliban destroyed 94% of all the opium poppies in Afghanistan, which and it was at that time the single largest producer of opium, which is the source of heroin on the planet.
Indeed.
And I was attending in March of 2001 an economic conference in Moscow, Russia, and I had learned of this destruction, and I said, oh my God, they've just taken, it could be as much as $200 billion. In liquid cash, when you factor in all the levels of sales up to the street level sales, you know, out of the world's banking system, and that's the American banking system. That was an act of economic warfare against the United States government. It was also the single most effective drug eradication program in human history. And I said, "You better watch it." I even wrote at the time, and it's on the website, that everybody better watch out. There's going to be serious trouble with Afghanistan, and that was in March and April of 2001 that I was writing this. Now, it's not coincidental, in fact, that we occupied Afghanistan in November of 2001, and November is the planting season. You plant the opium poppies in November, and you harvest in late May, early June, and a bumper crop was planted as soon as the U.S. got into the country.
You mean the growing of the opium is now back in full force?
Oh, as a matter of fact, to quote a recent story from CNN, opium production is now 34 times higher than it was under the Taliban, 3,400% higher. Afghanistan is now producing, I think, between 70 and 75% of the world's heroin.
Who's controlling this?
CIA is.
Why are you still alive?
Well, one of my favorite sayings is, I won't die a minute before God says so, which kind of relieves me of having to worry about that. But I think that at this late juncture in my life, with a newsletter that's read in 35 countries and by 35 members of Congress, the intelligence committees of both houses, that I have a measure of safety that if I drop dead tomorrow, people might ask some questions.
And after this program, we have either saved your life or we've contributed to your demise. I'm not sure.
Well, nobody's going to blame you for it. I would be doing what I do anyway.
All right. Thanks for that sign of confidence there with that. Well, so the opium production is up dramatically, and you say the CIA is behind that. How do you know that?
Well, that's probably those are the waters that I have swum in more deeply than anything else for more than 20 years now. I have studied, interviewed people, met DEA agents. I have lived in the waters of CIA involvement in the drug trade. It's extremely well documented. And I don't say anything that I can't prove. In dozens of stories, I have cited even CIA documents, including an Inspector General report from 1998, which, if you read it, just contains some of the most damning admissions in the world. But going back to the Vietnam War, it's extremely well documented. It continued certainly through Iran-Contra, when U.S. cocaine consumption went from roughly 80 metric tons in 1979 to 600 metric tons by 1986. That money goes through Wall Street. We have a report from Senator Carl Levin's Minority Committee on Correspondent Banking in January of 2001 admitting that at least $500 billion a year in criminal money was laundered through U.S. banks and financial markets. Whoever controls that money has an economic edge, as anyone who understands, who's ever borrowed money for a car understands. The difference in your monthly payment when you get a car loan at 1% and 10% is like an enormous jump in your payment.
Sure.
It's called the cost of capital.
Absolutely.
And whoever has the lowest cost of capital, whether it's buying a car or competing on the world economic stage, always wins.
What would happen if all that drug money that has been filtering through brokerage firms, Wall Street, U.S. banks, what would happen if it just completely dried up and stopped?
Well, probably, if it, that's a real strong hypothetical, and I don't think it's very likely.
No, nor do I.
Were it to happen, you would have an instant economic collapse, and we have been on the brink of that several times, not as a result of the drug money going away, just because It's a crisis of liquidity. Everybody knows that you got to have liquid cash to make your car payment and your credit card payments. It's no different on Wall Street if you're paying back bonds or if you're paying dividends or if you're paying off a leverage buyout or anything else. It's the liquid cash that really counts.
So some may say, though, Michael, well, I don't use drugs. My family doesn't use drugs. And the fact that this money continues to flow through the country and through the system, in the long run, I'm indirectly benefiting. I've got a pretty decent mortgage. I got a nice loan on a car. Mm-hmm. So, you know what? Okay. If this is a good standard of living. How many people would say that?
It's a great question. One of my closest friends in the whole world, who has really been one of my economic mentors, Catherine Austin Fitz, is a former managing director of the Wall Street Investment Bank, Dillon Reed. She's also a former assistant secretary of housing, and she and I have collaborated on really understanding how all this works, and it's been a wonderful chemistry between us. She gave a lecture talking about the same subject in Pennsylvania, I think about 2 years ago, to some very wealthy Philadelphians. And she put a red button on the table in front of her, you know, a little piece of paper, and said, okay, this is a button, and if you could push it, you would stop the drug trade. How many people would push it? And she said out of 100 people, only one person would push the button.
Dramatic.
We are not necessarily all addicted to drugs, but the American economy is absolutely addicted to drug money.
True. How many of our members of Congress in percent and our members of the Senate, the congressmen and women, how many of them are aware of what you're saying tonight and they're doing nothing about this?
That's a great question. Because denial is not a river in Egypt. It's kind of a pathological disease. I think a great many members, and I have spoken to, I guess in my career, maybe 15 or 20 on a personal basis, some more than others. Most of them don't know, don't want to know. Some of them do know. Some of them don't want to ask the question. Some of them just turn around and walk away when you try to bring it up. And others, if they're frank, will say, yeah, but there's nothing we can do about it.